it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another edition of Titletown, South Florida, the Miami Herald's high school sports show. I'm Andre Fernandez, the deputy sports editor at the Miami Herald, joined once again by sports writer David Wilson, and this week also by another sports writer, Jordan McPherson, who is a co-host of the show once. Now we got to get him on more often, man. We got to get you. Now that the Marlins season is over, there's no excuse. Got to get you on this show.
No Marlins news happening these days. None at all.
No, nothing, nothing whatsoever. And you know what? There are playoffs to cover. We got playoffs coming up next week. So we need all hands on deck here.
Absolutely. And then to give you guys an idea of what we have going for you before we get into the part about the playoffs, speaking of that, we had a couple of big games last week, even though the elite teams weren't really in big matchups, but a couple of good ones. Crop taking on MacArthur. We'll have some highlights of that big win for the Lightning, which pretty much solidified their postseason status and now has a chance to win the district title as well. Jordan, you watched Plantation pull away from Piper and take home a district title over there. Coach Steve Davis and the Colonels had a great second half and behind three touchdowns from Amor Ellis. And since the season is winding down, this was something cool that we wanted to do too, since we all play fantasy football. A lot of you out there I know do, you know, obsess over it and that sort of thing. We thought, let's do a combination of what we like to do with that and make a high school, the three of us pick high school fantasy football teams. And that way, now we're not gambling on this. We're not playing for anything. It was just mainly like a fun way to recognize a lot of the top standout athletes that have had great performances and great seasons so far this year in both Dade and Broward. So we'll go into that. Guys, on that note, how are your fantasy teams doing so far?
Well, Andre, you and I are actually co-piloting the one team that I am playing, that I am doing this year.
And it's not going so well.
Well, I mean, barring a massive collapse tonight, we're going to be four and four, which keeps us in the middle of the pack. We're in the playoffs. Our guy behind the scenes, Pierre Taylor, is in that league as well. He took it to us a couple weeks ago, but we're 4-4. We're at 500. We're on the right track. If we can have a strong finish, we'll be in the playoffs.
Yeah, shout out to Pierre Taylor, our producer, who kicked our collective arses a few weeks ago with Patrick Mahomes. But yeah, David, what about you? How's it going for you?
I've got a dynasty league where I've got Derrick Henry and Nick Chubb, so I'm feeling pretty good about my chances in that one. Joe Burrow's my quarterback. It's a top heavy league because all the buyers are always buying and the sellers are always tanking. But when I have those two, I feel like I got a shot to win any game.
Yeah, I know the feeling in those dynasty leagues. I'm in one that I've been in for about 15 years with a former colleague of ours, Manny Navarro. And, yeah, let's just say your backfield, I'd take just one of those guys right now if I could. So, but on that note, let's start right off, and let's get to, like we mentioned before, Ives Estates Park on Friday night, the Crop Lightning. They got off to a rough start this year, 2-4, before they suddenly won three games in a row, and all of a sudden, Crop is on a roll, and the big win was last week, 20-16 over the MacArthur Mustangs. The Lightning now, you know, it wasn't an easy game, but they were able to pull it off. Now they have a chance this season. The MacArthur Mustangs, though, coached by former Dolphins linebacker Kevin Burnett, they came out early and were running the football pretty well. Here's a clip from Marcus Jackson taking it into the end zone early on. But the Lightning denied them from that point on, and they answered quickly. Here's the quarterback, Jamal Haggins, who scored a couple of touchdowns on the night. Here's one pass that wasn't a score, but it was one of the biggest plays. He hit Frank Valbatine for a quick got him down to the one-yard line, set up a touchdown by Haggins on the next play. Take a look. Yeah! And from then on, it was all the crop running game. Julius Pascal, one of our players of the week nominees this week, had 89 yards on 20 carries, broke loose for a touchdown. Here's another one from earlier on. I think I said Pascal, but that was one of Hagen's scores, actually. Well, Pascal set it up with his running, though. And the victory now puts Kropp in a situation where coming in, MacArthur could have clinched it straight up with a win. Now, them, Kropp, and South Broward are all tied at the top of the district. Coming into the week, South Broward had the highest power ranking. But now South Broward has to face Miramar. So that could flip things where Kropp, who's playing Hialeah this week, a seemingly winnable game, could end up taking the district. It's been a heck of a turnaround for the Lightning. Let's take a look at what and listen to what Tom Caporal, their coach, had to say about it.
This win tonight obviously puts you right back in it. Talk about, like, you were talking a little bit about the resilience of the team after that kind of up and down start that you had. You know, what did it kind of take these last few weeks? What did you see behind the scenes that made you feel like you could do this?
Man, you know what? In any team like this, you know, you got to keep coming together. You know, I talk about believing in each other, believing in the kids, believing in the brotherhood, and do what we do every day. Discipline, attitude, and effort. You know what I mean? And then, you know, we just, I love these kids, man. They're tough. They're resilient. Just like you said, they're resilient. And, you know, we put in too much sweat equity this summer, these last 6 to 8 months, to underachieve like we did. And now we're playing good football the way we're supposed to play. We're playing the way Lightning football, the way I love to play Lightning football. You know what I mean? It's outstanding. I love it.
Talk about your running game, because, you know, you're able to really put it away in the second half, you know, just chew away yards and keep them. You know.
So we started fast early with the pass, and then we went to the run. That's kind of our game plan. We want to open them up, and then we just want to pound you. We want to grind you. We want to wear you down, okay, and show that we're in better condition than you. That's that weight room, yeah. Okay? That's that hill. That's them 120s. We ran 14 of them 120s the other day. Well, 140s, actually, from friggin' track to track. And it showed, man. It showed. And these kids gave me everything they had tonight. These coaches gave me everything they had tonight. This community. And I'm just really proud of them, and I love them.
Yeah.
That's what it's all about, man. That's what equity we put in this summer.
The three turnovers in the first half, you know, how big that was to swing it for you.
Hey, man, that was huge. Thank you so much. That was huge. You know, those turnovers are momentum changers. When you get that momentum, especially in high school football, that's what it's all about, man. That momentum can totally change the game, man. Totally change the game. And that's what it did for us. And it was awesome.
So, guys, I mean, Kropp, it's interesting because they've been such an up-and-down team the whole season, hard to predict, but now they seem to be on a roll, three in a row. They're going to be in the playoffs. I mean, hard to believe they would probably go very far in that region, but, I mean, maybe a team that can pull off at least an upset in the first round. They've played some tough teams.
Yeah, they have. I mean, they face Southridge, who we've seen has been a good team this year. Pace, Braddock, three game win streak so far with Hollywood Hills, Braddock, MacArthur. Offense doing well all three of those games after having to come out of back-to-back losses, especially in that district game against South Broward that put them in the spot where it was must-win last week. Again, momentum's a big thing. If they can go in on a four-game win streak, and first round can always give you some surprises. You never know.
Yeah, they're a team that I think is going to make you sweat no matter what, right? They just feel like – I know they – you know, depending, obviously it'll depend who they play, but they're a team that they're just, like you said, they're battle tested. They played a good schedule, I think, for a team of their caliber. You know, ultimately the talent discrepancy will probably come to bear at some point in the playoffs, but I think they're well coached, and I think they're a feisty team is the way I would kind of describe them.
And funny you say, because Tom Caporal's motto, he called it sweat equity, with just the hard work, the investment that those kids have poured in. I mean, I'm on a panel where there's a lot of sweat equity. I could tell people that. The two of you work like crazy. So another team that's doing that right now is Gulliver, because they started off, they had a rough one, 0-3 start. Obviously, you look at the schedule and you understand why they were 0-3, but they've put it together now, 5 in a row. A little ugly against South Miami early on. It was only 5-0, I believe, at the half. But 31-0 is where they ended up after they broke it open with behind the passing of quarterback Davi Belfort. But then the concern kind of shifted to his well-being, because he took a vicious hit on this play that you'll see right here where he threw one of his two touchdown passes to Antoine Mays. And And you hate to see that, but the good news was, and you're going to see a conversation I had with Earl Sims afterwards. You could see that they were pretty concerned. They were going to the hospital right after the game. But he said he had movement in all his extremities. And according to the school, he got out of the hospital pretty quickly and it seems like he's okay. Not sure if he's going to be able to play right away this next week, but he's all right. Let's look at what Earl Sims, take a listen to what he had to say about the team's turnaround.
Coach, so can you talk about, I guess, in the second half, the plays that, especially on the defensive side, you guys made to kind of separate and put this one away? What do you think about the way they played?
Yeah, guys stepped up and made some plays, got off the field. I like the way our defense played, like the way our offense responded. We even responded on special teams, making some extra points and field goals. So I appreciate the effort. You know, we kind of felt like we left some points on the field in the first half, and I appreciate the effort the second half.
This win, as you know, locks up the district for you, and now you know the focus can start, you know, toward the playoffs. What's the biggest thing you saw today that maybe you need to clean up before you get to that point?
Well, we can't wait. We cannot take time for granted. We can't wait. We gotta start fast, play hard, and play fast. We gotta go full throttle from the get.
And your quarterback, I know he took a little bit of a hit there. Any word on how he's doing?
Is he okay? No, we're gonna find out now. Please keep him in your prayers. I'm gonna check on him now.
As I said before, the word was that Belfort was gonna be okay, which is definitely good news. But guys, what do you think, Gulliver? We were talking about Kropp as a potential sleeper, but Gulliver at least has, you know, some of the obvious talent with a guy like Lamont Green who's tearing it up on the defensive end, Jaylen Brown. But it's going to be hard right from the get-go. It looks like it's projecting right now. It's either going to be Northwestern or Norland probably in that first round. What do you think?
Yeah, that's the problem is that classification is a bloodbath. You know, they're really good. I think I mentioned last week, they started the year and ranked in the top 100 in the nation by Max Preps. I think they thought that was a little high just because, you know, they have that a couple great seniors, but for the most part, a younger team. Are they a team that can just based on their talent probably put a scare in someone also? Sure, but I just think that classification is really tough for them. I mean, especially, you know, who knows what the status of the quarterback is.
Yeah, and just to echo David, just 2M is going to be an absolute gauntlet from the get-go. I mean, week one matchups in the playoffs are usually very mismatched, but when you look at this one, especially the 3-6 and the 4-5 matchups in 2M Region 4, it's going to be very good games, regardless of who they face, whether it's Northwestern or Norland. But again, you have a guy like Jaylen Brown, you have a guy like Lamont Green who's getting hot, you have a guy like Daniel Harris at corner, those three seniors trying to make their mark their final season. They're going to do what they can to try to make as much of a playoff push as they can, and they have the pieces there, and if they can get through that first game, then we'll see what they can do as they try to carry that momentum forward after that.
Yeah, depth up front, I think, on both sides, on both lines, is going to be a factor for sure, whether they win or lose, because, you know, Northwestern is heavy up front, skilled. Same goes for Norland. So those are going to be teams that may have that advantage on that side. But like you said, I mean, if they break a few big plays, maybe the turnover battle, if it's on their side, they can hang and they'll have a chance maybe to pull something off.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
But now we mentioned a few of the guys that we all had our that were on our radar when we decided to do this segment here. It's time for our high school fantasy football teams. So we're going to start by picking our quarterbacks for this. And now, just as a caveat here, if your name isn't mentioned as one of our three selections, it's no knock on you on any of you, because there are a ton of good quarterbacks, as David and I have said before on this on this show so far.
You can throw out some honorable mentions maybe at the end if we've got a
And again, since this is for fun and for recognition, we could definitely do that. I mean, I'll give you an example. I went with Ennio Yapur of Norlin, and no, not because he played a Champagnat. I mean, not everybody says that, but because this guy, if he was in the if it was an NFL pick, he runs, he throws, he racks up yards on both sides enough to win you a game. And he's a touchdown machine on both sides too. This guy, I mean, he reminds me of those quarterbacks like a Patrick Mahomes, in the sense that he just like he's a danger on in either facet to just score and score big, could blow up, give you 50 points in a game, and just the way he's been playing this year, he's really broken out and become one of the top quarterbacks. Only a sophomore, so his future, you know, still bright there, and the reason that Norlin really has a chance this year. So, Jordan, tell us a little bit about who you picked in this one.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, quarterback, it was tough. There were three or four guys who were on my radar. I mean, almost went with Columbus's Alberto Mendoza, almost went with Kelly Jenkins from Central. But then I realized, how could I not go with the guy who literally this past weekend just put himself into the top of the Miami-Dade County record book for career passing yards? So with that, I chose Northwestern's Teron Dickens. I mean, he's missed a couple games this year with an AC joint sprain, but similar to Ennio Yapur, he can throw, he can run. He has 14 touchdown passes against just four interceptions, has five rushing touchdowns over seven games. And when he's been in for Northwestern, the Bulls offense has been humming. You were able to notice the drop off when he wasn't there those couple weeks. And now that he's back, now that he's healthy, he's making Northwestern yet another option in that 2M, in that 2M gauntlet that's going to be coming out in a couple weeks.
Here's one of his many big plays. Take a look. That was in the Booker T. Washington game a couple weeks ago, which was it to now is the biggest win, the most important win that the Bulls have pulled off this season, since it got them back right back in the thick of the playoff picture, potentially in the as a top four seed for sure. And David, who'd you get at quarterback? Because I think we're crossing counties on this one, right?
Yes, I thought about Mendoza. That was on the short list. Thought, you know, Keon Jenkins is maybe the best quarterback in South Florida, but splits time a little bit. They've got a really good backup with Dylan Tulloch. They're so balanced. From a fantasy standpoint, though, I went with Cedric Bailey, the junior quarterback, running that Chaminade Madonna machine. And the thing I love about him, 26 touchdowns, only three interceptions. I love how well he takes care of the ball. He can run it a little bit too. And he's got, you know, just on a weekly basis, he has so many good receivers to throw to that that there aren't really bad games for a guy like him.
Yeah, it's almost not fair, though, the arsenal he's got.
I know.
I mean, there's so many weapons. And if they needed him to throw even more, he could easily – it's 26 TDs. He could easily have over 40.
Yeah.
The way he,
and they got a good running back too. A couple other names though that I wanted to throw out. Colin Hurst is another one, not having his best season, but obviously he's been one of the best quarterbacks in the area for the last couple of years. AJ Hairston from Monarch, a good dual threat guy if you're looking for that running quarterback.
Yeah.
And another guy, just from a fantasy standpoint, this is a guy we're going to have to be thinking of when we talk about overall athletes of the year in South Florida. At the end of the year, Jordan Faison, who plays quarterback for Pinecrest. Also committed to Notre Dame for lacrosse, 20 rushing touchdowns, mostly running. They run the ball. It looks like kind of like an option type thing, but run for 20 touchdowns, thrown for five.
He was our player of the year for lacrosse last year. Wasn't
for lacrosse.
He? Yes, he was. Yep. Yes, he was.
Going to Notre Dame. So a great athlete.
And Jordan compiles the results of those. I don't remember. Hairston was nominated for one of our players of the week. I don't know if he ended up winning it or not. Did he?
I don't remember. He was in there. I know he was in there. I think it was one of the weeks he and another guy, I think they were neck and neck. I forgot who won, but it was a couple weeks ago. He was one of the guys. And another honorable mention I want to mention just because I saw him last week, Amir Ellis from Plantation. He, watching him against Piper, he had four touchdowns overall in that game alone, three passing, and his overall numbers, he's hovering around 2,000 passing yards. I actually have the rest of the numbers right here. 2 seconds.
Ellis was one of our players of the week
for this week as well.
Yeah,
17 touchdowns, six interceptions, but he also has five rushing touchdowns and 400 rushing yards. Another one of those dual threat guys, and he's really come on strong towards the end of the year as well.
Yeah. I mean, again, deep quarterback class for sure. We had, I mean, if we would never have a problem picking one up on the waiver wire if we
Josh Townsend. We didn't mention Josh Townsend. There's another one.
Oh my God, it's Josh Townsend. He's one of my favorites. Yeah. I know, and it's unbelievable. And
Homestead, yeah.
The impact. Another great athlete that can you know, he gets it with his
rushing yards. Yeah.
And some rushing yards, all kind of things. But yeah, it would. You'd never be in shortage of quarterbacks. That's for sure. Let's look at those ball carriers now and in the backfield. And the running back, I think we decided to pick two for each of us. And, I mean, I guess maybe I'm biased because I've seen them four times this year already. But Antoine Smith for Booker T. I think the kid's come a long way this year. He's over 1,000 yards. Here's a kid who was a big body running back, got himself into better shape. You know, he's going to get himself into even better shape after Ice Harris puts him on the track this spring. And really, that's when you're going to see his full potential kind of blossom. But he's been – right back there. I mean, and not alone in that backfield. Gerald Modest is there too, but he's kind of been the workhorse guy back there for them and really made a difference. And another one that kind of slips under the radar, unless you look at his stats, Mark Wilder is one of the top running backs in terms of statistics in the entire state. I think he's over 1,600 yards now, which is pretty crazy, and really powers that Doral offense. And Doral, who's looking at potentially being the number two seed behind Columbus in that region, a big reason is Mark Wilder this year and what he's been able to do. But Jordan, you're again going over to Broward County. You've got a pretty great one yourself in your picks.
Yeah, my first guy to me was a no-brainer. American Heritage is Mark Fletcher, Ohio State commit. He's been the workhorse for that Patriots offense. 1,232 rushing yards, 12 touchdowns over 9 games. That includes having 194 yards and 2 touchdowns against Shaman Amadonna and 162 yards and a touchdown against Cardinal Gibbons. He's just been steady as can be, at least 100 yards in 6 of his 9 games, almost 9 yards a carry. He's been one of the more steady running backs that I've seen so far this season as my first guy. And yeah. I think we have a clip that we're going to show of one of his highlights from this season.
That's not even like a long one,
yeah,
but it just kind of shows you near the goal line. He's going to get you those points.
Yeah, definitely. And then my second guy, giving some love here to the Archbishop Carroll Bulldogs here. Alejandro Izaza, a senior running back for the District 8-1M champions, 8-1 record overall. And he's a big reason why, averaging 10 yards a carry, 1,054 rushing yards and 17 rushing touchdowns, along with two touchdown catches as well. Again, breakout guy for a team that's having a breakout season. Why not give them some love here?
Yeah, Carroll pounds the rock. I mean, they barely throw the football. It's kind of reminds me of the old Belen days when they were barely, you know, it was like run, and a lot of misdirection. Multiple running backs in that offense, and we talked about them last week. George Zagalis getting them back to contender status as well. David, you're going over to Broward County as well. Tell us a little bit about your picks.
Yeah, another two guys from teams we don't talk about a lot. One, Reggie Haywood, the running back for Calvary Christian, which is a very good 8-win team this year, won their district. Team we have not talked very much about, but wanted to give them a shout-out here. 1,500-plus rushing yards, averaging almost 10 yards per carry for a really good team and a district champion. Other guy I have mentioned, I think we actually talked about him last week or 2 weeks ago, DeAndre Desenor from North Broward Prep, only a sophomore, going to probably hit 1,000 yards on the season this weekend, 13 rushing touchdowns. He's also got 2 kick return touchdowns, a punt return touchdown, and an interception return touchdown. It's a reason why he's already considered one of the best players in the class of 2025.
And if he does what he did a couple of weeks ago when he set the school record with 7 touchdowns, it'll be his Christian McCaffrey-esque effort the other day wins you a game on his own.
There you go. Yeah.
So, but yeah, wide receivers are also in very, very big supply here. I mean, I'm going to go with a guy who Larry Bluestein, even on this show, said he was the first half MVP just because of his versatility. That's Edwin Joseph from Chaminade. I mean, the kid is so explosive just in that within that core of receivers that are probably the best in the country, but he can also do it on the defensive side. I mean, that's the interesting part. If we did this kind of a fantasy team, I think you could almost, this is something you can't do like on ESPN with NFL. You can't switch your receiver to also play DB, but these guys would be able to if we ever did it this way. And another one that I went with who is going to play wide receiver at the next level is Brandon Innes. But again, another guy that can do it both ways if you need him to. We saw him get a huge one on the defensive side in that Cardinal Gibbons victory. Take a look at the clip that we remember from a few weeks ago. Actually, I forgot. That was the one in the corner of the end zone, but he also had the INT. I think, right. David, you're the one that filmed that one. But, again, a great player on both sides. Ohio State just loading up and getting another great one there, along with Mark Fletcher, who we talked about earlier. But, Jordan, you have another one of these wide receiver DB types that's had a great year at Booker T. Washington.
Yes, I do. Yeah, my first guy is Xavier Irvin from Booker T. 22 catches, 450 yards, 9 touchdowns on offense. He also has 2 interceptions, 3 defended passes, a fumble recovery on defense. Again, another well-rounded player. And, again, having a very, very strong senior year. And then my second guy is Jesse Fields from Monarch, the top receiver option for A.J. Harrison, who David mentions, one of our honorable mentions earlier. 873 yards with 9 touchdowns. And the thing that stood out for me when I was looking through his stuff, against St. Thomas Aquinas, he had 7 catches, 112 yards, and 1 touchdown. And, again, arguably the toughest game that he was going to be going in this year. So to have a solid outing against Aquinas, that was enough to steal me for him to be my number 2 guy.
Yeah, he's like that Lions receiver you pick up where even though the team is bad, you know, he's going to give you a great statistical week. He's that type of player. That's impressive, though, because coming against St. Thomas, I don't care if it's even St. Thomas's backups. You know, that's pretty good. And Monarch in position to be one of the top teams in their region, just above Region 4 in Class 4. And David, you're going the Chaminade route. I know that. Tell us a little bit about your
Jeremiah Smith. His numbers aren't quite as good as some of these other guys. Still pretty good, 608 yards and 10 touchdowns. But I think he's the best wide receiver in South Florida. Every time you need a big play, you can throw it up to him and he's going to make it. Would put up bigger numbers, obviously, if he wasn't on a team as stacked as Chaminade. But still does it every week.
We've got one of those queued up here. Take a look. And that was against Northwestern, which was one of the best victories that they had this season. They just came out and just clobbered them on that Saturday afternoon. So legit. And your other going to Plantation with your other pick.
Yeah, Jamari Haynes. I believe we had him second team all Broward last year, maybe first. He was very good for them last year, having another excellent season, 654 yards, 7 touchdowns for another, Plantation, another good team. One that we don't talk about as much because they're not exactly like a state championship contender, but as we've said a couple of times, just consistently one of the best public school programs in Broward County.
Yeah, Haynes had a really big game last week against Piper. I believe it was the first touchdown catch, 60-some-odd yards from Amir Ellis, had close to 100 yards in the game. I was very impressed for my first time getting my eyes on him in person.
Yeah, no doubt. And Plantation, like we talked about before, a big one this week. We'll talk about that when we get to our picks segment. Now let's go to the defensive side of the ball. And I went with a guy who I've watched ever since I was in Tallahassee last year, really grow as a player and really get better. And, you know, a legacy kid because his father was one of the best that's ever come out of Dade County. And that's Lamont Green Jr. I mean, 19 sacks. That's him about to take down South Miami's quarterback last week. And pick up his 19th sack of the season, which right now I think it's him and Reuben Bain, I think, are the two that are up at the top of the leaderboard in Dade County. But Lamont has really become even more of a playmaker than he was even last season, and you're starting to really see him flourish into a great player. David, you've seen Lamont for a couple of years now also. What have you thought about just his progression, the way he's developed?
Yeah, I mean, he's been a guy who's always had, he's been, obviously, his dad is, like you mentioned, one of the greats to ever come out of South Florida. Committed to Florida State early in his career, always was, like, pretty highly regarded in the recruiting rankings. Everyone can see the physical tools, but this is, he's taken a leap this year, right, where it's finally all coming together, and you can see why Florida State and schools all over the country have been really high on him all along.
And speaking of Hurricane Bane, that's your guy, Jordan, in this mock draft.
Yeah, once you took Green first, I kind of felt like I had to go with Bane as my 1B. Again, it was 1A and 1B between Green and Bane. I mean, Ruben Bane, 20 tackles for loss, 12 sacks this year. He's just been an absolute beast the last couple seasons for Central and just continues to get better. I know they held him out a little bit earlier this year before unleashing him, but now that he's there and out in full force, he's close to unstoppable.
Yeah, he also had a minor injury right after the IMG game that kept him
out. He had a knee surgery in the offseason. He hurt his knee in the state championship game last year, so they were kind of like easing him back. But he's going to be a four-time first-team All-County defensive lineman, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, which is pretty rare. And here's a clip of Bane from earlier this season. Actually, the clutch play that he made against Columbus, which wasn't a sack but a turning point. As we remember, that's the one where it turned into an intentional grounding, forced a field goal miss, and it pretty much clipped Columbus's comeback right there. So, David, who do you have? I mean, I know, and you're going actually to someone that probably doesn't get talked about enough on your pick.
Yeah, Gavin Schmarcelline from Belen, 14 and a half sacks, 25 TFLs, and 75 total tackles as an edge rusher for the Wolverines. Another one of those guys who, like, ever since he was a freshman and probably earlier, for those who really follow the youth football scene, like, knew that this guy was one of the next stars to come out of Dade County, and he has been excellent every year for Steamboat County last season, and probably headed towards another one this year.
Yeah, being highly recruited too, right? I mean, he's got
a lot of offers. Yep.
Yeah.
So
awesome.
He's a star. One other guy I wanted to mention who I have not seen this team play in person, Jalen Jackson from Fort Lauderdale, 19 and a half sacks this year.
Yes. I'm glad you brought him up. Yeah, definitely. I'm glad you brought him up. He's one of those under the radar types that came across everybody's board here. All right, linebackers again. I mean, this could have been, you name it, there's a ton of guys. I ended up going just to kind of spread it out a little bit. I went with TJ Capers because he didn't really come on strong at the beginning of the year, but this is a kid who's going to be probably the top recruit in Dade County next year, or pretty close. Mm-hmm. And he's had – the reason Columbus has been able to take a leap as the season goes on is because of plays that he's making. Here's one of them that he made recently in the game against Central. They really don't make that comeback if it's not for some of the plays that defense made, and he's right at the heart of it. I mean, the sack numbers aren't tremendous this year, but I think the impact is there, and he's only going to get better as the year goes on. Jordan, you're going down south to find this one, and this is a guy that we've been we've known about him a little bit for a couple of years now, but he's really having a breakout year.
Yeah, just like you, I wanted to spread the love a little bit. I went with Eduardo Nunez from Homestead, mostly because he does a little bit of everything. He gets 10 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, 4 quarterback hurries, 2 interceptions, 2 fumble recoveries, and 5 forced fumbles. He's doing it. He's making impacts in multiple ways, not just racking up the tackles, feasting in the backfield. He's able to do stuff in coverage. He's able to lodge the ball out, and we're able to see his impact for a Homestead team that's continuing to get on the rise and building off of making their playoff push last year.
Yeah, definitely. And here's a clip of Nunez. It's a kind of a little bit of an old clip, but it's one that shows you the impact he can make in games. So David, tell us about your pick at linebacker. I also could have gone with Stanquan Clark. That was one that I had that in there earlier.
So yeah.
Yeah. I switched the last minute, but he's another. But since we were going to mention a few, even if we didn't pick them, Stanquan Clark is another beast right there. But you have another one that's really
fumble at the end of the Columbus game. Exactly. I've got David Vidala from American Heritage.
Very good choice.
I think his freshman year, he was a freshman All-American, according to Max Preps. Was at St. Thomas Aquinas for a year or two, back at American Heritage now. And he's got already 100 plus tackles. And obviously he's going to keep compiling numbers there. 19 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, small, undersized. You won't see him pop up on like all the recruiting rankings because of that, but he's just a fantastic football player.
Yeah. I got to watch him during the game against Western take a pick 6, 85 yards to see that effort from him on top of just getting 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 tackles every game. Yeah. The effort's always there from this kid. He's been a 3-year starter at Heritage his freshman year, sophomore year, and this year. transfer. He was at Aquinas his junior year, but he's when he's on the field, he makes his presence known.
Yeah, he's the tackle machine that every fantasy team needs. When you need a guy that's going to get you like 10 every week, count on him to do it for you. DBs now, as we round up the defensive side of the ball. Here's an interesting one, not about necessarily about him, but about his school. We hadn't put anybody from Aquinas yet, and that's saying something, considering this is a titan down here. And I think the reason is because since we kind of were looking at it kind of in the fantasy football lens, they really collectively all kind of do everything in terms of yards.
Yeah, they got three tackles, running backs they use. Yeah, they got like three or four D1 receivers.
Right.
Yeah. There's a reason that they are so dominant on the high school football scene. That depth is incredible. And that's what really is fueling their runs every single year. From, like you said, from the purpose of the exercise we're doing, it kind of docks them some points from that front, but it also speaks to what they're able to do with just reloading and just cycling guys in and out and having no drop off.
Exactly. And Kamari Robinson is the pick that I was going with. I mean, not a lot of interception numbers really, but the Duke commit is a stalwart back there. 8 pass breakups. It seems like, you know, lockdown on defense, the receivers can't really get any traction against him, barely ever. So he's the one that I thought of just to kind of see if we could put someone in there from St. Thomas. But definitely they have playmakers. I mean, the stats may not show it as much, but you look at starting a quarterback, Ezekiel Harris has had a great year. The two running backs, Jamari Sands and Jordan Lyle, they're both splitting carries. So, you know, they'd be the kind of guys that you'd pick up a week if someone was on a bye, and then maybe they, you know, they're like those 600, 700 yard backs that you can count on, but explosive. And that depth is going to come in huge come playoff time if they can make another state title run. Jordan, tell us about your guy in the secondary.
Yeah, I went with Columbus's Amir Foster. I mean, the pure stats, which again, this probably works against me on the fantasy side of it, but he has a pick six, he has 2 fumble recoveries, but just what he brings to that defense overall. Entering the season, he was the only guy remaining from Columbus's state championship team a few years back, and he was the one who's really helped set the standard early in the season and helped Columbus find its groove early on that they've carried so far this season. Their only loss has been the Central, and they rallied. They came back and made that game competitive, and Amir Foster has played a big role in Columbus's success this year as they try to get toward trying to get a title in Class 4M this year.
Yeah, no doubt. And David, you went with the powerhouse again, who just keeps
up. Shout-out pick. Chris Ewald, sophomore cornerback. He was a freshman All-American last year. And has been even better now in year 2. 4 interceptions, 9 pass breakups. Playing opposite Edwin Joseph. Got to throw somewhere, I guess. So they've been trying to throw on him, and he's got a couple picks out of it. Pretty good problem to have for Shama. Too many good DBs.
Yeah, I mean, they have too many of everything, pretty much, at Shama. That's not a bad thing. Now we're going to go to special teams a little bit, only in the sense of maybe kick returner types or versatile, kind of like all-purpose guys. Not the special teamers, but all-purpose types that are great. I mean, but the heart and soul of that Dillard team for me is Christopher Johnson, for everybody, really. Christopher Johnson, everybody who's watched him, he wins games. I mean, every time you cover Dillard, he's pretty much, it doesn't matter who the opponent is, you can make an argument that he's the best player on the field, whether it's, you know, running the ball, catching the ball, returning kicks. He's had a couple times even where penalties have denied him of more kickoff returns for touchdowns. Here's a touchdown he scored against St. Thomas, which was the only score they had against St. Thomas a couple weeks ago. Take a look. Yeah, but Mr. Everything and whoever gets him, I mean, he's going to be tremendous at the next level, I think. Jordan, you again went under the radar a little bit with this one.
Yeah, I went under the radar, and also just the interesting story from when I was looking through finding guys. I went with a guy, his name is Clayton Cannon II. He's a junior at Stoneman Douglas. Their main kickoff returner, averaging 37.3 yards per kickoff return, has a kickoff return touchdown. Also has 4 touchdown catches, a receiver, and a pick 6 on defense. But the interesting note for me was, in addition to Clayton Cannon II, they also have a senior, Clayton Cannon Jr., who is their starting running back. So 2 Clayton Cannons on the Stoneman Douglas team that enters the week at 6-3.
2 Cannons.
Clayton Cannon Jr. got some consideration for me at running back too. He's over 1,200 yards this year for them.
Yeah, and the Eagles in position to make the playoffs as of right this week. They'd be a 5 seed in that region as well, and a big reason are the Cannon brothers for sure. David, this is your boy. This is the kid you've
Robbie
seen a
Washington.
Bunch of times this
I've probably
year.
Seen him more than anyone else this
right.
year. He is obviously everyone knows about the explosiveness from the Miami commit. Great returner and a guy who can turn a 4-yard slant into an 80-yard touchdown. The other thing I like about him, the volume. Palmetto has had – they have a sophomore quarterback, first-time starter. They've been, you know, trying to ease him in, make it easy for him. So they throw a lot of screens to him, a lot of slants to him. And, you know, he can get you with the volume and with the explosiveness. And I think that makes him obviously a great football player, but also a good fantasy football player.
Yeah, and we could have shown returns, we could have shown other plays, but here's one I think that you filmed a couple of weeks ago that kind of shows it's just it was not a touchdown, but it shows the explosiveness of how he can turn, you know, just a simple screen pass into something. Take a look.
What are we doing?
Yeah, and somebody fired up on those sidelines, let me tell you that, and that one, but Palmetto, I mean, Palmetto's going to get wherever they're going to get to, as far as they're going to get to this year, only if the Washington brothers and Bobby Washington, of course.
Yeah, he could have gotten some consideration as a linebacker. Because he's super productive. Another guy tackles, sacks, TFLs, does some of everything for them.
Yeah, probably still the best hit I've seen or heard this year was that preseason game where he just clocked the kid.
And then the next week he knocked the helmet off a kid. So, like, he makes highlights.
There you go. And this, in some leagues, you pick a coach. So we did. And on this one, we're going to –
Never heard of that, but
– Yeah, no, I've played in one once that had – yeah, that had a coach.
What is the point system? How does that work?
Is it just wins?
It's wins. Basically, it's just wins. Yeah,
you got extra points if you win. Gotcha.
Right. So, you know, in those days, if you had Belichick, you were golden because you were going to get 12, 13 wins. You know, he was the top coach pick all the time. Now, not so much, but now you'd probably want Sean McDermott. But Jube Joseph is who I went with. I mean, it's only his first year as the head coach at Central, but you could see the imprint that he's made on these kids. I mean, they march to his beat. I mean, the discipline level has grown over there. It shows in the way they play. They haven't been touched this year. They got the only scares have been against IMG and Columbus, two of the better teams. And it shows. It shows why in such a packed region, why we're all feeling confident that they are the favorite going into the playoffs right now. Jordan, not far away from Central, you picked another guy who's a veteran in Dade County, and we know the history there. But tell us who you got.
Yeah, no, I had to go with Ice Harris. I mean, you have the track record that speaks for itself. But when you look at this year specifically, just him coming back and how quickly he got Booker T to turn around and look like it's almost back to the Booker T of old. And to do it in his first year back and to get them to where are they 8-2 right now going into the playoffs and to be able to be where they're at, it's remarkable. It's not surprising, but it's impressive to say the least.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, when Ice shows up, it's like the switch flips in Overtown and all of a sudden they become a powerhouse again. And it's amazing to see how quickly they've gotten themselves back in the state title picture. David, another state title contender for you.
Yeah, I went with Dave Dunn. Shows up at Columbus in 2019. Columbus had never won a state championship at that point. They win a state championship that year. Next year, they probably would have gone back-to-back. Instead, it's COVID. They just won a Tri-County championship. Last year, a little bit of a down year. This year, they're back to being a state championship favorite. You know, there's a lot of advantages to coaching at Columbus, a passionate fan base, great resources, great facilities, all that kind of stuff. But, you know, they kind of for a team that has as many great resources as they do, they kind of like play like the scrappy team, which is what I like about them. You know, their quarterbacks always, you know, they grow up, they mature, they become great as juniors and seniors. They've obviously got a really good running back this year in Cedric Irvin. But their defense, like we said, they lose 10 starters, it feels like, every year, and they end up being just fine. So to me, he's as good a coach as there is in all of Florida.
Yeah, and a few honorable mentions we could throw in there, guys. I mean, Michael Bailey over at Blanche Ely. What a job they've done to go from 1-9 to 8-0. You know, George Zagalis, who we mentioned before at Carroll, turning things around over there. You know, plenty of guys that have done well this year in turning their respective programs around. So that does it for our fantasy football segment. We hope we highlighted a lot of kids. I mean, if we missed anybody, I'm sure we'll try to get to you before the season is over. But we want to remind you, a lot of those kids that we mentioned, like an Amir Ellis, are up for Player of the Week this week. Vote for the Player of the Week polls, as usual, at MiamiHerald.com. And we have a few others in addition to Amir Ellis in Broward. Colton Heinrich for Cardinal Gibbons had 136 yards, caught 2 touchdown passes last week in a win over Stranahan. On the Dade side, Julius Pascal is one of the nominees. And then, as we always do, we branch out a little bit beyond football. And we have Carola Rodriguez, who led Divine Savior to the regional finals in volleyball. She's one of the nominees. Emma Hancock won a regional title for St. Brendan this week. And, of course, the great Remy Bacardi, who keeps tearing it up on the golf courses at Palmer Trinity, our reigning player of the year on the girls' side. She's up there, too. And so remember to vote. Player of the Week polls every week. We'll have them on MiamiHerald.com. And now, guys, for our weekly picks segment, we're going to look at 3 games this week as we wrap up the regular season. Again, a lot of the top contenders are off this week, resting up for the playoffs, but there's still a few games where teams are kind of fighting for seeding. You know, we know they're in, but they're kind of trying to get more comfortably in. And in Coconut Creek's case, they're playing Palmetto down at Southridge on Thursday night. Palmetto firmly in the playoffs. Creek, right now, the 7th seed as of last week. So it wouldn't hurt for them to pull off a win like this. Who do you guys have? Yeah, let's start with David.
I'll go with Palmetto in this one. Creek, just both teams actually kind of a little inconsistent this year. That's how I would describe them. Creek has obviously had some really high highs, although I think their win against Western probably less impressive than we thought at the time. But I just think Palmetto has gotten better, I think, as the year has gone on. Obviously, other than, you know, a loss to Norland a couple of weeks ago, I think their quarterback play has significantly improved. And then I just think that the way, you know, Creek gets into some low scoring games, and I think Palmetto is well suited to win a low scoring game because of how good that defense is. And then the fact that Robbie Washington, the guy we mentioned earlier, can turn nothing into something and get you the points you need to win.
Yeah. Jordan, what do you think of this one?
Yeah.
You saw Creek, didn't you?
I have not seen Creek. I haven't seen either of these teams this year, but just going off of track records, I'm going to lean toward Palmetto. Also, the fact the home field advantage and with Creek having to make that long drive down to Southridge, I think that could also play a factor for them, giving Palmetto a little bit of an edge there just in terms of the shorter ride there. And I think Palmetto is better suited for the matchup.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Creek's defense would have to play lights out in this game to kind of handle, like David was saying, to kind of handle the talent level that they're going to see, you know, explosive playmakers like a Robbie Washington. I'm going to go with Palmetto too. I don't think it's going to be a bad game. I think it's going to be pretty competitive because of Creek's defense. They might keep them in it for a little bit. But yeah, I think one explosive player too, and Palmetto's got this one for sure. Let's go over to Broward now with 2 teams that have won their districts. But again, they're kind of fighting for a seeding to be sort of in that top 4 in their respective classes. And that's Plantation and Western. I'll start with Jordan because he saw Plantation last week. I know he's seen plenty of Western this year. Kind of where do you see this matchup going in?
Yeah, this one's interesting. I've seen Western 3 times this year. Their opening game against Georgia St. John's Creek, against American Heritage, and against Miramar. And outside of the first half against John's Creek, Western's offense has not really lived up to the hype against teams that are going to be making the playoffs. They got shut out against Aquinas. They struggled often against Heritage. They got shut out against Miramar. Plantation, the only game I saw them against Piper, obviously I see Western as a team that's definitely steps ahead of Piper, but I think Plantation's going to be able to pull this out. Their defense was really good last week from what I saw, and I think they're going to do just enough to contain Colin Hurst in that offense, and their offense, between they have 3 or 4 good receivers who can make plays, and their run game is pretty good as well. I think it's going to be close, but I think Plantation has the edge here over Western.
David, you're probably going to be down there on Friday night from the looks of it. What do you think of this one?
I'll go with Western with a lot of hesitation. And that is basically just like a, you know, these two teams seem very comparable on paper. It's basically trust in Colin Hurst, who, as I mentioned, was our Broward player of the year last year and has not had his best season, largely probably because this whole offense just seems to be a little out of sorts.
Yeah.
But I'll go with Western and be worried that I might get burned by it.
You know what? I'm going to say it's the last week of the regular season. Plantation's been playing better football. I think Western on paper is the better team. I agree with you guys.
We've been waiting all year for them to be what we thought they were going to be.
Yeah, and then when are they going to show it? I don't know. I think I'm picking Plantation. I think they'll pull it off. I think it's the last game of the season. Maybe it'll happen. And Western's got to prove that they're the Western we thought they might be in the preseason. Until proven otherwise, oh well. So we're going to go with that one. And then finally, last but not least, the Soul Bowl in Broward has a little more meaning this year, thanks to Ely, you know, rejoining the living this year after going 1-9 last year, 8-0. Can they cap an undefeated season, or is Dillard too much for them? What do you think, David?
Dillard's probably too much for them, but that shouldn't over. Like, I mean, this Blanche Ely turnaround has been incredible. This Dillard team is just, you know, probably a step ahead right now. I mean, if Blanche Ely can sustain this over years and years, it will be awesome for Broward County football because, as I've mentioned a couple times on the show, the gap between the private schools and the public schools there is so massive. With Dillard right now, kind of the one public school that is in that same sort of realm as the Heritage and Gibbons and St. Thomas, obviously, and Chaminade. But Blanche Ely, like we saw, obviously Deerfield was good for a long time. Western has been good for you know, the last 5 years or so here. But Deerfield a little down. If Blanche Ely can step up and step into that vacuum, that'll be great. But this Dillard team for now is, I think, just a cut above.
Jordan, what do you think of this one?
Yeah, I'm going to echo David. I think Dillard wins this. But for me, the interesting thing is see how competitive Ely is against them.
I wouldn't be surprised if this is a closer game.
I think it's because
the rivalry aspect.
I completely agree. I think it's going to be a close game. And the interesting for me is just the fact of where they're seated in the playoffs right now. They're in the same region. If I remember correctly, correct me if I'm wrong, Jerry, but isn't Dillard 2 and Ely's 3 at this point heading into this week?
Yeah, right. This is probably the opening act of 2 because
exactly.
One's going to be the 2 and the 3, and then more than likely they're going to dispatch their first round opponents and play each other round 2. So
yeah, so for me, this is going to be – like you just said, this is going to be act 1. I'm interested to see how close it is this week and then to see what happens when they – if/when they face each other in week 2 of the playoffs and see what adjustments get made in between now and then.
Yeah, that's what we're going to find out, really, what they're made of. But, yeah, I'm with you guys. I think Ely is on the right track. I think eventually they're going to get to the point where they can be more competitive in the region overall. But I think Dillard just has a little too much talent. They have all those playmakers. And Christopher Johnson, again, kind of like we said about Robbie Washington in the other game. I mean, he's the playmaker that could win this game with one – breaking one explosive play, something like that. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Panthers, at least in the first clash between these two. And that'll do it for our pick segment. That'll do it for episode 8 of Titletown South Florida. Episode 8 already. We appreciate everybody that has become a fan of the show, that continues to watch week in and week out. And if you're brand new to it, welcome. And we hope you enjoy it and continue to watch with us. We're going to come back to you next week with our playoff preview as we look ahead to the first round and beyond, maybe even make some early in the playoff state championship picks, and we'll bring you all that plus some highlights from the final week of the regular season. For David Wilson, for Jordan McPherson, I'm Andre Fernandez. Thanks for joining us again. We'll see you next week.